Necessity may be the mother of invention, but Kurt Anderson hopes that it'll be the mother of reinvention and help pull the U.S. economy out of financial crisis. In his latest book called Reset, Mr. Anderson writes that the current downturn may be just what the U.S. needs to break its overdependence on fossil fuels and rein in excessive consumer spending. He hopes the country will use this setback to reinvent itself in a more creative and sustainable way. Kurt Anderson is the best-selling novelist, regular contributor to Time, New York, The New Yorker, and Vanity Fair. He's also the host of Studio 360 on NPR and locally here on WNYC. His book is published by Random House. I'm very pleased that it brings him back to our show today. Hi, Kurt.
Hi. Happy to be here.
You described the financial system that crashed last fall as a casino economy. Is that your term?
Well, it's a term I used and hadn't seen before when I first used it in a little piece I wrote a couple of years ago. Yeah, I had this sort of aha moment a couple of years ago about the – I'm not really a populist, I guess, by nature, but I had this moment where I saw that it had looked rigged for a long time with the rich perpetually getting richer and not only the poor but the middle – really not getting their fair share. And I think people, you know, came to realize that, which is why we had the part of the reason we had the political change the last few years.
In a casino, often you win because you're lucky.
Well, exactly. And I think the casino became the sort of governing trope of our economy instead of the factory floor or the office hive where everybody is more or less working together to accomplish something productive, as opposed to a casino where you go in and maybe, if you're very lucky, you win, but most people don't.
Well, we've been experiencing a series of bubbles. How long did the most recent one last?
Well, certainly the last dozen years in terms of real estate. But I argue in this book, and it's really about more than just economics. It's about sort of group psychology and culture and the way we think about getting something for nothing or working hard. I think beyond when a bubble did or didn't happen in real estate or finance or elsewhere, I think since the early 1980s, when the long modern bull market began, that has been an era, this extraordinary era where increasingly people thought there's no downside. Yeah, there are bumps in the road, but basically I'm just going to keep getting wealthier if I'm already wealthy.
Well, must there always be a bubble? Can't we just have a stable economy that just chugs along?
Well, we could become more like, say, Canada or Vermont. And I don't see any much chance of that happening. As I look at my reading of American history, is that we are a bubble and panic economy, and we're kind of bipolar in that way. We switch from crazy, wild and crazy sprees where we go out and dig for gold or invest in stocks or whatever it is, and then kaboom, we crash. And so we are like, we have been like sort of teenagers driving all across the road from ditch to ditch. Then we get chastened and drive straight for a while and then suddenly hit the gas and end up in the ditch again.
So we don't seem to learn from past mistakes, and we don't read history well enough to know that the same sort of thing happened many years ago for the Dutch with tulips.
Well, I don't think we learn from mistakes, but not for very long. We learn from mistakes for, let's say, a decade. As you look at history, American economic and political history, it cycles back and forth, sort of a, more or less usually a decade or a dozen years in this direction, then a decade or a dozen years in this direction. This last era, this 25-year era, was exceptionally long. And so we're in a position where a lot of people alive today don't know any other way of American life.
But despite the fact that it was long, there have been any number of industries that have been in trouble. The auto industry, media, healthcare. Have we been ignoring the signs?
I think we have. I think there has been a great kind of game of denial on all of our parts. You know, you look back in the newspaper headlines in 1979 and 80, and they're already talking about the long-term crisis of Detroit. Certainly, as soon as there was an internet a dozen years ago, people saw the end of the game for much of media. But we never thought push would really, really come to shove, and now it has.
You've been writing a blog on the internet for Time magazine called Reset at time.com. Did this book grow out of that blog, and have you been issuing the kinds of warnings you felt that others should have been issuing?
Well, the book actually grew out of an idea that my friend Rick Stengel, the editor of Time, had back last winter at the grim depths of the crash, which became an essay and a cover story for Time, which then grew into the book and has now also become this blog. It's really not so much about warnings and issuing, oh, aren't we terrible and didn't we get too lazy and full of magical thinking, all of which is true. But mostly I try to look at hopeful signs, as they say, the green shoots of how we are resetting, how the savings rate in this country has already zoomed up, for instance.
But still, you make a comparison of the United States to Wile E. Coyote from the Roadrunner series. Quote, racing heedlessly across the endless American landscape at maximum speed. So was the U.S. economy like Wile E. Coyote in that it raced off the edge of a cliff, stopped, and when it realized it had nothing to stand on, suddenly plummeted to earth?
Well, that's what I see the last few years. I mean, I argue that we were sort of over the edge of the cliff in midair for really since, say, 9/11. And finally last fall, we looked down and hit. Like Wile E. Coyote, we think, oh, we can order this mail order gizmo. That's the way we'll get rich. Or in his case, get the Roadrunner. So, yeah, I do think that there is something very American about Wile E. Coyote. Now, Wile E. Coyote, however, never dies. He also doesn't ever learn a lesson. I don't think America's about to die, but I think we can, in relatively small ways, learn a lesson. And again, historically, after these great booms and then busts, we almost always have a period of chastened rediscovery of responsibility and prudence and discipline.
My guest is Kurt Anderson, the New York Times bestselling author, and I should have said PRI star on Studio 360's PRI, not NPR. His latest book is Reset, How This Crisis Can Restore Our Values and Renew America. It's published by Random House. You mentioned earlier that we have been building larger houses, buying heavier and less efficient cars, running up larger and larger debts. We've also been talking about an obesity problem in America. Have we been eating more? Is that tied in with the same sort of thinking?
Well, I think it is. I mean, on the one hand, there are, as you've talked to people who make this argument, that there is a kind of agribusiness industrial world that is invested in making high-calorie things very cheap, and that has certainly enabled us to get fatter. But I think it is all part of the same. There are not really thinking about consequences, not engaging in delayed gratification, which used to be part of a definition of maturity, not thinking about sustainable ways of life. I mean, the average one of us is 20 pounds heavier than a person of the same age was 30 years ago. That can't go on. If we're another 20 pounds heavier in 30 years, I think that's sort of all she wrote. And so we can eat whatever we want. We can do whatever we want. Everything's good after 9/11. Just go out and shop. All of that, I think, in the aggregate, created a culture where for all the talk of personal responsibility, there wasn't much personal responsibility.
You've suggested that Americans might benefit from adopting a modified version of the 12-step program to get their addictions to eating and spending to where it would be more reasonable. I get the feeling you're only half joking.
I am exactly half joking. I think the vocabulary of...
Do you want to be known as Kurt A. somewhere down the line?
I'll take that. And, of course, Bill lived in Brooklyn, as do I. I think that the recovery vocabulary that we've all become so familiar with in the last 25 years is a useful one because it is not just analogous. It's almost literal, the degree to which we thought money was cheap and gas is cheap and it was and we can't control our consumption and our habits. Unlike, say, addictions to alcohol or drugs, we can't quit spending. You know, it's more like what people describe food addicts and sex addicts. It's more like that. We got to keep doing it. It's a matter of getting a fundamentally necessary and healthy habit under control and be a little more temperate and moderate.
How far do you want to go with the 12-step program? Doesn't it include a higher power?
Mine is a highly secularized version of the 12-step program.
What's obvious is that it's easier, really, to get people to eliminate something than to modify it. And we are talking about modifying.
Well, that's interesting because that goes back to this idea that we just talked about of Americans.
You give up alcohol, but it's hard to drink in moderation if you're an alcoholic.
Well, and it is apparently hard for Americans over the long haul and in as a collective, as we just talked about, to sort of go down the center of the road. It's one thing or the other. It's boom or bust. We drink to get drunk, or we abstain totally.
And when I remember reading when gas prices went down a little bit, suddenly SUV sales went up again.
Well, exactly, and those are things. I mean, we talk. I'm a big believer in the free market, but I'm also a big believer, as we have been for the last century, in tweaking the mechanisms of the free market to get the results we actually want. And, for instance, getting gas prices up to a level where that wouldn't be the case. And for the long haul, as the oil in the earth disappears, we can transition to other ways would be a way to go. But again, I think this is this moment, and to the degree people stay a little scared and stay a little chastened by what just happened, is a great opportunity to reset the table.
Well, the last time somebody talked about this that I remember was Jimmy Carter, and he got in a lot of trouble for talking about the malaise and telling Americans they had to change their way.
Well, I mean, and that may be partly a function of the Jimmy Carter personality, and the fact I am, again, not talking about a malaise. I'm not saying, oh, pitiful, poor Americans, we're so terrible. I'm saying this is the way America rolls, and let's recognize that and use this moment, which we get every generation or two, to set things up in a way that will let us be a great nation for longer.
Well, you suggest a number of things that we can do to better capitalize and manage our strengths. And at the top of your list is immigration, which is rather controversial. Many Americans are worried about immigration because of job competition these days, but also some are even opposed to health care reform because it would mean subsidizing illegal immigrants.
Yeah, immigration and illegal immigrants becomes the great third rail in American politics. But, you know, the fact that the Bush administration, of course, proposed a sensible, moderate idea of reformation of our immigration policy shows you that it's possible that we're not stuck in this perpetual shouting match between left and right and one side or the other, that reasonableness and self-interested reasonableness. Immigration reform is not about being nice to immigrants so much or illegal immigrants, but rather, okay, we now have an economy that requires a certain amount of really cheap labor that in our case tends to come from Mexico. Okay, instead of just screaming about that and going crazy about it and having them here and demonizing them, let's figure out how many we need at what rate. Let's figure out how many really high-skilled people we need, immigrants we need, and this economy can use, and create mechanisms for managing those immigration gates rather than effectively allowing people to pour in and then freaking out about it.
Well, talking about shouting matches, according to a story in the New York Post last month, Donald Trump objected to your description of him as a clownish reality show artifact living the high life in Manhattan and Palm Beach. He said he'd given part of the money he'd made from The Apprentice to charity. Why are you going after Donald Trump? Does he represent something that you think is bad about America?
Not bad. I think America has these two sides. It has the hardworking ant side and the party-hardy let's have fun grasshopper side. Both of those things, and Donald Trump is definitely the grasshopper, right? And I was comparing two sort of symbols of the last 25 years, this great wealth creation era. Warren Buffett on the one hand as a certain kind of American, and Donald Trump on the other as another kind of American. And you know, the fact that we have both of those characters within us, within the American character, is what makes us American instead of Canadian, I guess.
Well, a caller asks if you want to just retreat to Puritanism and the last century? What's the new remedy short of regression?
Well, no. See, again, it's not, you know, it's not a matter of switching 180 degrees back and from some kind of 17th century Puritanism. We were hardly Puritans in the 19th century or 20th century. But really, it's a matter of retreating a little bit from all-out, hell-bent, kind of magical thinking about how our 401ks can't go down and our houses can't decrease in value. Of course not. Well, I'm not talking about a Puritanism. But just as interest, we know about the miracle of compounding interest. Small amounts of appreciation every year add up to a lot. So can small changes done consistently add up to a lot. So no, I'm not talking at all. I am an anti-Puritan in all the conventional senses.
Kurt Anderson, the author of Reset, How This Crisis Can Restore Our Values and Renew America, will be speaking with Regina Spektor. Will she be singing?
She will be singing several songs.
And Catherine Lamford tonight at 7 o'clock at the Union Square Barnes & Noble store. That's on 17th Street. The book is published by Random House. And, of course, you can always hear Kurt on PRI's Peabody Award-winning series, Studio 360, broadcast right out of our WNYC studios.
Just upstairs.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank
again,
you,
Kurt.
Leonard.